everyone, welcome to edition 171 of the NRF1 podcast, your Formula One podcast recorded right here in Norfolk, United Kingdom, and brought to you by our proud partners, Grand Prix Racing Online, where you can sign up. Visit nrf1.uk or gpro.net/nrf1 and go racing. My name is sports journalist Michael Bailey, and in this podcast, we are going to preview the 2017 Canadian Grand Prix. Will Lewis Hamilton win at Montreal again? Will Fernando Alonso be bouncing up and down the pit lane, having rediscovered his mojo? And will Red Bull be screwed? Because that's what I'm expecting. Joining me on the pod for tonight's F1 fun once again are Richard Baxter and the Springall brothers, Callum and Dan. I hope we're all very well. Now, Dan, you made your debut on the last podcast. Very good of you. Well done. 10 points. Go F3 Cup. But we missed out the important debutant questions, which I'm now going to ask you. So please, if you will answer these, just so we get accustomed to your Formula One beliefs. Your favourite driver ever?
I would probably say Alan Prost.
Oh, okay. Favourite ever team?
Ferrari.
Now, you've kind of already answered this one. Prost or Senna?
Oh, I don't know. That's a tough one. Prost.
For a minute, I thought. And Heikki Kovalainen or Jarno Trulli?
Oh, Jarno Trulli.
Most people go for Jarno. Poor Heikki. Because he was quite miserable the last time I saw him.
I think Trulli as well, obviously, has had, I should say, a longer career.
He's still alive. But yeah.
In Formula One, I mean.
Yeah.
And he was, of course, so well known for the Trulli train.
Yes. Is that outside this podcast or just on this podcast?
It's probably his whole life, to be honest.
Yeah. Just his career. So before we get stuck into the podcast properly, our Monaco review and our F1 latest news podcasts are available for you to listen to on your podcast player of choice. Just visit nrf1.uk/podsubscribe and you'll be able to find the link you needed. If that link is not there, just let us know. Email nrf1podcast@gmail.com. So, Canada. Now, Perry Hamilton couldn't make tonight. He always tries to make one of the podcasts around Canada because it's his favourite track, Rich. He loves it. And it's been quite important to Formula One in recent years because I think it's when it has been dull and shit, it's offered a bit of light. How do you stand on Canada?
I really like it. It's one of those where I almost always forget it's on the calendar. But when it comes to it, I'm like, yes, Canada. just because it's something about the characteristics of the circuit, because it's also a part-time street circuit. And the fact that it's not really used by any other formulas of motorsport very often. So the circuit is very green. So, of course, when Formula One comes there, a lot of the time they struggle for grip and it always throws up a bit of a surprise. So and of course 2012 we had the great scenario of having 7 winners from 7 different races, and that was one of those where you didn't know who was going to win until the last few laps. Anyway,
who won it that year? Was it Jensen? The year Jensen won it
was Lewis Hamilton. Yeah,
he wins there a lot, doesn't he?
He does win there a lot. That was his first win of 2012, I think, that year. Well, yeah, that would be. I've always said previously, but but he does win there a lot, and I think that's where he won his first ever race.
Yes, that sounds right too. He does like it around Canada. What do you guys make of the track? Do you like it? I mean, it's one of those things. I think when Liberty Media sit down and talk about wanting a Super Bowl each race weekend, Canada is one of the places you can deliver that because the place loves it.
Yeah, I think you needn't ask whether it's a circuit that I like. Very fond memories. But yeah, it's something that throws up something quite different. And you have the ultimate dichotomy between Monaco and Canada. One's very, you know, tight and twisty, very high downforce, and the other's, I suppose, also quite rear limited, but low downforce and power dependent. So, again, well, going back to what you said about the Super Bowl consumerism topic, it is essentially America. So they do have that kind of...
Well, the Canadians will love that. Canada, essentially America. I mean, that could be a logo, really, couldn't it? Get join in, Canadian fans. Yeah,
I've lost my train of
thought. Yeah, you lost your train. It was Canada.
Yeah, there is that kind of consumer mentality there, and they have the, you know, all of the. I suppose they're drawn to that kind of poppy, mainstream kind of lifestyle. So it should be one that, if they do bring more sort of concerts and all that kind of confab, then it should go down pretty well there.
You're a fan, I can tell. That Jenson Button win at Canada, would that go down as one of your favourite ever races?
It's the favourite ever, honestly. I can't remember a race that would pet better sum up his whole career. You know, was with 30 laps to go, I think he was dead last. It was, what, like 2-3 seconds a lap quicker and came through to win it on the last race. It just seems it was everything and anything that can characterise him as a racer. You know, he just never gave up.
At, you know, the last lap, I think it's coming up behind Seb. What were you doing when you were watching that? I'm assuming in your living room?
Yeah, I was sitting in the living room watching the race with my brother. And
this brother?
Else, I think. Yeah. The only one.
That helps, yeah, makes it easy.
And yeah, I just saw him come up behind him. It was like, second will be all right, but he's not going to do it. Then, come around turn 5 into turn 6. And I think I was kind of like half not paying attention. It was like 10:30. And I was just thinking about going to bed, honestly. Actually, how old was I? I was 13, so it's probably right past bedtime.
It's like year 8, isn't it?
Probably, yeah. Year 8, year 9, something like that. And yeah, I saw Vettel get slightly wide onto the white line. I thought it was all right, but then, you know, disappeared out of shot, panned to the next camera, and, you know, it was halfway off the track, and I think it was the only time I was throwing my arms up in the air watching F1. And if you ask my family, they'd probably say that I'm quite sedate watching sports, surprisingly. Yeah,
you're very much a Kimi Raikkonen watching.
But not then.
No.
Love it.
What a race. I mean, even I have my arms up in the air, and I do put my arms up in the air quite a lot, but I can appreciate how awesome that was. Canada, Dan, in terms of the tracker, it was always the one where you basically had, I always imagine if they didn't have to have a rear wing, they probably wouldn't stick one on the car.
I think that one would be more reserved for Monza, seeing as Canada, you've got the little tight and twisty bit around the back, haven't you? So you do still actually need some of the downforce. I think that's probably combined with the start-stop nature of the end of the lap and with the start-finish line as well, always seems to throw up a good race, because with the extra downforce, you've got everyone punching a bigger hole through the air, so it makes it much better for slipstreaming, and then you've got the DRS there as well. So it always seems to throw up an interesting race, and I'm quite looking forward to it, actually.
That almost makes me think it'll be a bit like Indy. And we'll see Fernando Alonso using his recent experience to good effect, but we'll come on to that in a bit, I'm sure. They fiddled with the Wall of Champions, haven't they? They slightly reprofiled the chicane. I remember we were talking about that a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I heard something. I missed that pod, I think, so I didn't hear properly what they'd done. But I know they'd done something, which is a shame, because that was always the big kind of watching point of who's going to go into it this year.
But then no one ever did. I remember we'd all, and I'm sure you've probably got this prediction ready, someone will go into the World of Champions, or you might name who it is. And I had to follow. And no one ever went in it anymore, which is maybe because all the drivers are and they're not worthy of going into World of Champions.
I got a feeling it might have been Hülkenberg, maybe. He was being overtaken by someone and he kind of freaks out by it and turned the wrong way. And he didn't hit the wall or the other guy, but he just kind of had a spin and stopped just before it.
I can't hit the wall. I can't hit the wall. I remember normally it was someone like, you know, I don't know. I don't want to belittle someone, but let's say Pastor Maldonado slipped into the Wall of Champions, and it'd be like, Wall of Champions, you'd be lucky.
If you're going to do it properly, you have to do it how it was in 97, 98, whenever it was, when you had the three world champions go into it and really go big. Yeah. None of this, oh, I've accidentally gone over a sausage curb and broken my front wing off by bumping. If you're going to go big.
Okay, yeah, let's hope we don't regret that. I'm sure it'll be absolutely fine. I mean, there was a suggestion, I think, that they've reprofiled the corner, the chicane, so it'll actually be quicker. So the cars will be going quicker through there, so they may not kiss the wall, but at least they'll be, you know, doing it at a faster speed.
Well, that just ruined the circuit now then, because that was prime opportunity for overtaking. If they're going to make it quicker, then having a less start-stop nature and smaller braking zones, albeit with 2017 downforce as well, you're going to have even smaller braking zones, so it's going to make it even harder for overtaking.
Well, I might be wrong, has happened before. It might be really slow. They may have put more sausages in, I don't know, but we'll have to see.
The good thing is there's other corners on the track where they do get inches away from the barrier where we have seen drivers go into recent years. So maybe they're just going to rename another wall the Wall of Champions.
Two. The Return. The Revenge. Pastel's Revenge. Yeah, something like that. I want Lewis Hamilton to kind of be the focus point here because he does love this track. Whenever he's had a difficult run, the Canadian Grand Prix turned up and it's managed to help him out of a hole. And I just wonder, I mean, if it doesn't, Ferrari have the ability to make a real statement here because they're probably still the underpowered car just a bit, or even though they're the quicker race car. So if they can beat Lewis at this track, that would say something for the rest of the season, wouldn't it?
I think generally with the setup, they have a lot easier ride than the Mercedes. You know, they have they have a shorter wheelbase and the car seems a lot more drivable, which is, you know, drivability is key at Montreal, especially with trying to run the downforce as low as possible. So I wouldn't be too surprised if Ferrari were on the pace. But that being said, if we take a case in point and look at Russia, in the first sector and the second sector, which is, you know, particularly in the first sector, it's quite power reliant. Mercedes were gaining a couple of tenths just on the run down into turn one. But in the sort of twistier, slower sector three, Ferrari were gaining close to the thick end of a second. So I wouldn't be too surprised if Ferrari did actually go and win.
Rich?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised because they have been very competitive, Mercedes, at other circuits which have been known to be Mercedes tracks. But then also, we've had it doesn't always favour the highest downforce car, which is obviously, if you look at Red Bull years, they had their car which is quick around pretty much every circuit, and yet they'd come to Montreal and you'd have Mercedes or Ferrari right up there, really pushing them all the way and winning races. So if the field was closer, if Red Bull weren't so far away and actually didn't have a watch engine, actually had something that worked,
I'd be inclined
to say that an underdog team could get it, but it is between Mercedes and Ferrari quite simply so far because no one else is up there on the power side of things.
Yeah, I've got a note here about, I mean, I saw a line, they clearly did pretty well at Monaco, but they're now really braced for a really tough run because I think we've got Canada, Silverstone's coming up, isn't it? Germany,
Baku, well.
Hungary. I mean, they're all power circuits, and realistically, are we not going to see the start of Red Bull's deficiencies just rearing their massive ugly heads?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, because they tend to go for massive amounts of downforce, and obviously that comes with drag as well. So, plus the fact they've got this watch engine, so they're going to be definitely on the back foot for these next three or four races. So, also considering Austria, so yeah, they're going to want to do well at the home circuit, but they're probably not.
No, they're probably not. They've kind of been in that position before as well. It's interesting. I saw a line about how McLaren's upgrades are performing at brilliant. But like 95% success rate, or obviously of what CFD calculations are coming up with numbers, and the reality is they're very close to that. So they're very excited, which means it's all Honda's fault again, I suppose, doesn't it? Basically,
the car can't exactly get any worse, can it? So,
well, what about Fernando though? He's coming back from Indy, bouncing. As I said, he's going to be bouncing along in that pit, in that paddock, going, "I'm awesome, don't blame me, it's the team's fault. Look at how good I am. Everyone in America, and as we know, effectively Canada, loves me. What is this other car that I've got to deal with?"
I mean, I saw some of Indy and I was watching it, and he was up the front, he was doing really well, and I was like, he could win this. I really hope he does.
I was convinced he was going to win it, mainly because I predicted he wouldn't.
And then I stopped to have dinner, a nice biryani, in case you're interested.
It was, yeah. It was nice. Where from?
My girlfriend's mum, she made it.
Wow. So. I think I've tasted some of this food as well, haven't I? When you came around to watch the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix at the end of last season. Well, so. I look forward to being invited around to dinner. We'll do a podcast from a live dinner. It'll be amazing.
You can try.
Well, you can try. I'm not going to ask. You can do that. Yeah, cheers, Rich.
But yeah, I stopped to have dinner, looked back on BT Sport afterwards, and was like, wait a second, where's Alonso? And wondering why there's only about 10 cars going around. And then realised that the Honda engine has gone kaput. And I was really annoyed because what a moment that would have been if he had won that.
I mean, we were kind of all willing it to happen, weren't we? And then it didn't. But you go all that way and the engine blows again.
He rediscovered what it was like to be winning again, winning something. He was in the lead for quite a long time. So maybe he can, this will keep him more focused and driven, even though I suppose he didn't really need it that much because he's still looking quite good.
Yeah. So. I felt quite, as a Formula One fan, quite proud that a Formula One driver had gone there and impressed so much. And yeah, I'm not, I don't have any particular feelings necessarily to Fernando Alonso, but you know, I think you sort of respect him so much more having done that. And we gave him, I'm sure we said all this before, but we criticised him because it was a big jump. He'd never done it before, and it felt, you just had to see some of the crashes to realise how dangerous racing in oval racing like that is. If you can't anticipate things, if you're not used to it. But Fernando just showed what a great racer he is, I thought.
And of course, the former Honda driver, Takuma Sato, actually winning the race in the end.
Drinking the milk, lucky boy.
Hello everyone, this is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers.
The key question we're going to ask, and we've asked it before, most important weekend for... Who is this the most important weekend for? Callum, I'm going to come to your brother first because he's Mr. Still Day, his debut week, so it counts. Who's this the most important weekend for?
Lewis Hamilton, definitely. He's, I don't know how many points he is behind Sebastian now, but yeah, he needs to win this weekend in order to close the gap a bit more, especially seeing as he had such a bad weekend in Monaco. He needs this to forward his momentum further into the rest of the season, so it's quite a critical weekend.
25 points. It's a race win and a DNF.
Yeah, so with reliability being the way it is this season so far, I think, well, I'm probably going to jinx it now, aren't I?
We'll get to the predictions in the other podcast, so you can't jinx anything yet.
I would agree with Hamilton. That is a race win already after not many races. Seven races?
Yeah, this is round seven, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, so I mean, a race win already, he's going to have to either pull something spectacular out of the bag and go on a really long winning streak, or hope that Ferrari suffer some technical difficulties, which during the races they haven't really shown. Well, Vettel's car hasn't really shown any so far.
I've got to be honest, I'd be kind of like 75% sure that Seb and Ferrari will end up winning the championships at the moment, because I just think it's all geared to them. But we probably shouldn't say that after six rounds, because it's a long year. Callum, most important weekend for?
Sebastian Vettel.
Yeah, because he's going to win all the championships.
Well, this is supposedly one of Ferrari's weak spots, so if they can win, it's, you know, it's one hell of a statement saying that they really have caught up to Mercedes on raw terms.
You brought the pod beautifully round full circle there, Callum. Well done, 10 points. I think we're done. I'll just plug social media, if I may. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, I'm sure you know, but if you don't, follow us on all of them. The handle for all three is at TheNRF1. You can visit Facebook, fb.me/TheNRF1. We're approaching 5,000 likes on Facebook. So keep on liking, and the torrent of content will hopefully increase in recent weeks. It's been a busy few weeks. We'll have lots of chances for you to interact, subscribe, support us, and sign up over the season. There are lots of blogs. We've got a blog from Rich coming up, which I'm promised will be webbed soon, but it's sitting there as well. We've got some great blogs that have been posted by Callum too. Kyle may well have some betting tips for us ahead of Montreal. He does well on those, so they're well worth a look. And if you fancy having a little wager on the Formula One action, then you can do that. Follow what Kyle says. But essentially, everything you need to know, you will find at our website, which is nrf1.uk. And as I said, you can get in touch with us. We love reading your emails. We'll get some of them involved in the coming weeks too. Just send us an email to nrf1podcast@gmail.com. Your comments, your questions, anything you'd like to raise, and we'll bring it up on the podcast. On its way is our prediction league update, although there might not be much of an update, but there'll certainly be predictions in it. If you want to get involved as well in the prediction league, we'll tell you all of those details too. But for now, a big goodbye from our guests, from Rich.
Goodbye.
From Callum. And from Dan.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from myself. Thanks to our proud partners, Grand Prix Racing Online, where you can sign up at gpro.net/NRF1. This has been the NRF1 podcast. Oh, Canada will be the refrain as we struggle over our Montreal predictions shortly. Until then, goodbye.